Illinois' primary contest is less than a week away, which is why NPR Illinois is bringing you this Illinois Edition pre-primary special. I'm Amanda Vinicky, the State House Bureau Chief. Let me tell you, this election cycle is wild. I'm not just talking about the top of the ticket, though Illinois has already seen presidential candidates including Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, and Bernie Sanders stop by.
We are going to run our country so well and so tight and so smart.
The foundations of American democracy are being undermined.
We need a president who's passionate about creating jobs and raising incomes like I am. For hardworking middle-class families again.
Other White House hopefuls will stump in the state before Tuesday, too. Governor Bruce Rauner has already, presumably, cast his vote for one of the Republicans in the running. He early voted in Arlington Heights on Sunday. He didn't endorse anyone and, when asked, refused to say who he supports.
Well, I'll let you know when I think it's my job to state something. I have specifically, carefully avoided making commentary about the presidential election.
But the governor, directly, and in cases indirectly, has propped up candidates for the state legislature. As State House Bureau Chief, that's what interests me, these wild goings-on in races for the State House and Senate. One candidate alleges supporters of his opponent took a staple gun and bottle to his head outside his Chicago campaign office. Another Democratic primary could lead to Illinois' first ever Asian American legislator. Teresa Ma is a former professor who helped campaign for all of Chicago's Chinatown to be in one district versus split into several. Now she wants to represent Chinatown. She's facing off against a prominent Latino, Alex Acevedo, the son of retiring state representative Eddie Acevedo. The president of the United States has even gotten involved in another Illinois House race, and will House Speaker Michael Madigan survive an earnest challenge? More on that coming up. First, I called someone to give some perspective on all that cash that's flowing into these campaigns.
My name is Scott Kennedy. I'm the operator of a website called Illinois Election Data, where we try to keep an eye on data pertaining to elections.
Kennedy calls this work fun. I wanted to ask him some basics about something that's happened in a couple of big races, the lifting of caps on campaign contributions. Here's your primer.
Prior to 2011, General Assembly passed a bill instituting contribution limits that would go in place for various races to try to limit the amount of money that came in to the political process. Since that time, the Supreme Court Citizens United decision has said that corporations or individuals or other entities, if they want to spend money on their own, not coordinated with a candidate, but on their own, they can spend as much as they want, that it's a free speech issue. So we've seen these entities, these rather wealthy entities, create their own committees. They're called independent expenditure committees. At the federal level, the term for that is super PAC. So if you're familiar with the term super PAC, at the state level, independent expenditure committee is a super PAC. Now, if they come in and spend very large sums of money, the legislature determined that would be an unfair advantage. So in that sort of an instance, you would want to remove the contribution limits so that the candidate facing this very large pot of money wouldn't be at a significant disadvantage. It wouldn't be unfair.
Caps can also be lifted if a wealthy candidate self-funds his or her campaign, like Bruce Rauner did in 2014 for his campaign for governor. Kennedy says some of that has gone on this year, mostly with judicial candidates. Here's a PSA. If you're confused about who to vote for judge, hit Google. Bar and legal associations vet the judicial candidates and give recommendations. Anyway, Kennedy says caps have been lifted on quite a few General Assembly races this year because of those outside super PACs spending more than $100,000 on legislative candidates. He says one of the more interesting examples is the Illinois United for Change PAC, which is trying to defeat Speaker Madigan.
In doing so, now the Speaker's candidate committee can raise unlimited funds. He has not yet, since that went into effect, started raising checks that he wouldn't have otherwise been able to before, but he still can for another week, and we're all keeping an eye to see if he does.
And of course, Madigan is not only the Speaker of the Illinois House, he's also head of the Democratic Party of Illinois, and once he's raised those money without caps, he, post-primary, will be able to transfer it to other campaign funds, and that may help him as Democrats try to fend off Republican opposition funded by GOP governor, who, as we've noted, is wealthy, Bruce Rauner.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so whatever he gets in his candidate committee, he can make unlimited transfers to the state party. He's also state party chair, so he controls that fund. And then in the general election, the state party funds are able to make unlimited transfers to the individual candidates. So if he has 10 or 15 targeted races this fall, he would basically be able to use all of the funds he could raise right now in an unlimited manner to help elect or re-elect those Democrats that are facing very difficult challenges from the Republicans, who will likely be funded by Bruce Rauner and his allies this fall.
Let's talk briefly about Governor Bruce Rauner. In a matter of days, recently, he contributed $4 million to a couple of different entities, his campaign committee, as well as his own, quote, super PAC. Might that be all, or could Rauner also be funding some other campaigns, but we don't know about it because he doesn't have to disclose?
Well, that's certainly a possibility. It's hard to say what we don't know for the areas where the disclosure isn't required. I think it's almost more interesting to go back to right before he became governor. After he was elected, but before he became governor, he still had a month and a half where he was facing no contribution limits because of his 2014 election. After that election, his campaign fund is almost complete, empty, because he was running for governor. He then puts $10 million of his own money, raises $10 million from two of his friends, and now he had $20 million in his candidate committee literally one day before contribution limits went back into effect for his candidate committee. So he's had $20 million sitting in that committee. They tell the press back then, this is just one thing that we're doing. We're going to make this money available to our allies in the General Assembly. We want to pass an aggressive agenda. We want people to know that we're going to support the people that are supporting us. And this is one of those vehicles. Fast forward a few months, and he created something called the Turnaround Agenda, which is an independent expenditure committee. That is an IE. It's a super PAC. And it has since had $4.5 million in there. And then, as you just pointed out, last Monday, he put $2 million more into his super PAC, and this past Monday, he put $2 million more into his candidate committee. So he has almost $21 million in his personal candidate committee. He has $4.5 million in his independent expenditure committee, and he can use that for anything he wants. The only thing we haven't seen him do is the independent expenditure committee hasn't really spent anything. At least in these last few months, it had some activity early last year, but it's been kind of quiet. So, and he already had almost $19 million in his candidate committee before he put $2 million more. So we're all kind of waiting to see what the governor's going to do there. Most people, when they move $2 million around, they usually have some sort of a plan. And so I'm just kind of curious to see what that plan is and what's going to happen when he starts executing it.
As Kennedy hinted at, that Turnaround Illinois PAC did in January give roughly $2 million to a different group, the Liberty Principles PAC, run by conservative radio show host Dan Proft. And that PAC has been busy lately. It spent just about that much. Yes, $2 million to help State Trooper Bryce Benton best perhaps Rauner's least favorite Republican legislator, incumbent State Senator Sam McCann. Follow along with me here. Big bucks are flying all over the place. Another group led by Proft, the Illinois Opportunity Project, which, because it's a nonprofit, doesn't have to disclose its funders, has put some $800,000 toward helping Representative Ken Duncan, Rauner's closest Democratic ally in the General Assembly. Duncan has also gotten boosts from another super PAC. This one's called Illinois Go. That stands for Growth and Opportunity. Its leaders say the purpose is to protect business, reform-minded Democrats, but many Democrats are suspicious because its wealthy donors often have ties to Governor Rauner. Phew, got all that? Coming up on the show, we'll hear directly from Benton and McCann. Check out our website, WUIS.org, for a more thorough explanation from Illinois Election Data's Scott Kennedy, and listen to him talk about a lot of other big money, tightly contested races. There's one of interest to any of you Chicago Bears fans out there. I'm Amanda Vinicky. This is Illinois Edition's pre-primary special. This is Illinois Edition's pre-primary special. I'm Amanda Vinicky. And as you've heard, one of the most closely watched races is in the 50th State Senate District. Part of Springfield's tucked in that. The district then stretches west over to the Missouri border. Now that seat's held by Republican Sam McCann. This election cycle is playing out during a difficult time in Illinois politics, with the standoff between Governor Bruce Rauner and the legislature's leading Democrats. Political observers are keeping an extra close eye on a couple of races to see if the election's results tilt power in either side's favor. This is one of them. Be it because they agree with him, the threat of his war chest, party loyalty, or what, Republicans have pretty much towed Governor Bruce Rauner's line, especially on big issues, like on a bill Rauner once called the worst he'd ever seen. It would allow state contract disputes with unions to be settled by binding arbitration. Remember, Rauner hates this bill. McCann, in August, voted in support of it. He says that's why, ever since, he's incurred Rauner's wrath.
I've heard it reported in the press that I voted with the Democrats. I haven't voted with the Democrats.
You voted?
I voted for my people. I voted for the constituents who contacted me by the thousands, quite frankly. So again, it's called representative government. We live in a constitutional representative republic. And if the representative or the elected representatives don't listen to the people and don't come here and actually vote accordingly at some point, then it's not really representative government. It just starts becoming some sort of oligarchy.
For that vote, you say you're representing your constituents, but do you see that you have suffered because of that vote?
Well, I suppose I'm in this primary probably because of that vote. I think the governor's been very clear about that. And again, that's a choice he's made. You know, I think a lot of folks lose sight of the reason that they're sent here. They're sent here to work on behalf of the people, to protect and defend the constitutions of the state and the nation, not just to advance their own personal agendas. So, you know, I find it interesting that I've actually supported the guy. I've voted with the caucus, with the governor on many, many issues. The vast majority of the votes that we took here helped him balance the 2015 FY15 budget the way he wanted to do it. Helped him with a lot of other votes, and it's like on the turnaround agenda. I've heard it reported in the press that McCann is the only Republican to not be supporting the turnaround agenda, has repeatedly voted against it. You know, the turnaround agenda has never had a vote in the Senate. I think the turnaround agenda is comprised of 5 Senate bills, none of which have been called for a vote in the Senate, 3 of which I'm a co-sponsor of. I'm a co-sponsor on 3/5, on 60% of the turnaround agenda. So, you know, I think history has proven, whether it's in politics, government, society, that if you're someone who won't accept 99%, that's just not good enough for you. History has proven that doesn't end well for that person or that group. And so, I'm proud of my voting record. I'm proud of the way I've represented my district. Again, I know that not every, it's like in my district, the Second Amendment, right? So in my district, I consider this to be a pro-Second Amendment district. That doesn't mean that everybody in the district is as pro-Second Amendment as other people or as myself. Again, you can't make everybody happy all the time. As a matter of fact, you can never make everybody
that's
happy.
That's a lesson in life, not
that's
just
a
politics.
Lesson. That's a lesson in life. But what you can do is treat everybody with respect. And that's what I believe the Constitution is all about. I think if you were to take the Constitution and take all those words that comprise it and put it in a pressure cooker and boil it down under extreme heat and pressure, the one word that would pop out would be the word respect. It doesn't mean we all have to agree with each other all the time, but we do have to treat each other with respect. It's called equal protection under the law. It's what the Constitution is all about. It's what being an American and an Illinoisan is all about. And so I treat my constituents with respect. And one of the ways I respect them is I listen to them. And, you know, I tell people up front, they may not always like where I'm at on an issue, but they know where I'm at on an issue. I don't hide it. I don't try to sugarcoat it. They know where I'm at on the issue. And where I'm at on the issue is largely because of where the district as a whole is at on the issue.
Speaking of some of those tactics or punishments, what have you, there have been ads, allegations, even a complaint filed with the State Board of Elections regarding what you have submitted for mileage reimbursements. $38,000, if I'm accurate, from your campaign account, and then another $19,000 from the state. You have a big district, but that's a whole lot of mileage reimbursement.
Well, that's over. I mean, I've driven over 500,000 miles since I started this job. I mean, I think that's something that a lot of folks don't quite understand. That's not something, that's not a weekly or a monthly stipend. I mean, I think these are big districts we have downstate, very big districts, and I'm proud of the way I serve my district. Now, not everybody does it the way I do it. I admit that, but I'm proud of the way I do it because every one of those miles driven represents a constituent heard and a constituent served, and that allows me to come back here and speak and vote accordingly to be prepared. And so I'm proud of the fact that I work 6 and 7 days a week and that I have driven over 500,000 miles in the last half dozen years in my quest to be elected and serve the people in my district. So I have nothing
so
to
apologize. So nothing there in terms of,
there's
should you have kept better records if this is exactly how
you know what, I probably could have kept better records. I will admit that. I don't know that the statute, when it comes to campaign finance laws here in Illinois, maybe the statute is clear on exactly how to keep better logs, but I think between my calendar that has probably at least 60-70% of my travel on it, and then I'm very active on social media. Anybody who follows me on Facebook knows that I'm very active there. So between my calendar and my social media, I think I have a pretty good log, a pretty good accounting of my mileage, and my odometers. I have 3 odometers with 200,000 miles or more on them, and I drove those miles. Those are legitimate miles, legitimate reimbursement. I wish I were a wealthy guy. I wish I was so wealthy that I could serve the district the way I serve it and I didn't have to take any reimbursement for it. But I think most of the people listening to this interview will say, yeah, you know, the average person, you got to put gas in your vehicle. You have to have tires on your vehicle. You have to change the oil. You know, you got to do what you got to do to stay on the road and to serve the people. And I'm not an independently wealthy man. I wish I were. I'm not. I'm very proud of those miles. And, you know, it's interesting that it was brought out at the time it was brought out and the way it was. I don't think that timing is coincidental. And I think if it was reported another way, you know, it could be reported another way. And where
look
I
at
could,
how well
yeah,
this
look at how Senator McCann serves his district. So again, I think it all has to do with the campaign climate, with what's going on. And again, I think we will be vindicated.
McCann's been a senator for 5 years. He calls himself a fiscal conservative.
One of the founding members of our party, President Lincoln, he said, "You can't make your house stronger by tearing down your neighbor's house." And it seems like we have a class of politicians these days who are really trying. It's class warfare at its finest, or at its worst, I should say, where they really are trying to make folks feel better about themselves by tearing down a certain classification of worker or persons within our society. What we really need to be doing here, what I want to do for the district and for the state, is I want to be a part of the process, a part of the conversation and a part of the process that puts policies into place that allows for every Illinoisan to go up the ladder.
That was Republican State Senator Sam McCann. At the end of the program, we'll hear from his opponent, Bryce Benton. Also ahead, a peek into the challenge House Speaker Michael Madigan is facing. I'm Amanda Vinicky. This is an Illinois Edition pre-primary special. House Speaker Michael Madigan has won the Democratic primary and subsequently the general election in his district 22 times, usually sailing to victory without serious opposition. But this year, there are powerful forces trying to topple him. He's facing a well-funded challenge in next Tuesday's primary. A closer look at that race with Illinois Edition's 2016 pre-primary special. I'm Amanda Vinicky. If you hear Governor Bruce Rauner talk, well, pretty much ever, there's one main culprit for Illinois' deficit, pension debt, lack of budget, and so on and so on.
The Speaker Madigan and the politicians he controls are taking the state down.
That sort of talk has made Madigan unpopular in much of Illinois. But unlike Rauner, who has to worry about what people in the suburbs, Chicago, and downstate think of him, Speaker Madigan doesn't need to be popular statewide. He only needs to win the support of voters in an enclave on the southwest side of Chicago, a heavily Latino area that includes Midway Airport. Then it's up to members of the Illinois House to decide who's speaker. Madigan's held that top job in the House since 1983, save for 2 years of Republican control in the 90s. He's been a state rep for 44 years. That's longer than Jason Gonzalez has been alive.
I've had many opportunities to go and make lots of money in with the background and business that I have and, you know, and the degrees that I have. And I decided to come back here because I care about our state.
Gonzalez is a 42-year-old Ivy League graduate who's taking on Madigan for the Democratic nomination in the 22nd House District. Like Rauner, Gonzalez blames Madigan for many of Illinois' failures.
I think that Mr. Madigan is a great person at dodging responsibility. He is very powerful and obviously has too much power. And I think many people in my district agree. I've talked door to door with people. They feel that Mr. Madigan's power is just too much. It's so much that it really distorts our democratic process in Illinois.
Gonzalez, whose father is Mexican-American, says the district deserves someone more representative of the demographics of the area.
My grandmother was here in the adjacent district in 26th Street, and I spent many of my early years in the area growing up and spending time with her and on 26th Street. And then my parents moved us to the suburbs, early on. And, I've had ties to the district with friends and other relatives that live here. And, you know, I live in the Westlawn neighborhood, so I've been here. By, you know, time the election comes, I will be here a few years.
Which is just about how long Gonzalez says he's been considering running against Madigan. Madigan supporters are suspicious of that timing and question Gonzalez's claims of deep ties, given his relative status as a newcomer. The 73-year-old House Speaker was born in the 22nd District and, save for college, never really left. Gonzalez says he decided to rent rather than buy a home there because he didn't want Madigan to be able to tinker with legislative boundary lines and draw him out of the district. Gonzalez says he has ideas for revitalizing the area, like he wants to build what he calls an advanced manufacturing cluster. He says it could bring about a manufacturing renaissance.
I feel that, and many people feel, that it's time for a change. You know, 45 years is a long time for someone to be in office. And you know, if we look at what needs to be done here, you know, there's economic development in terms of, you know, vacant parcels on Cicero Avenue, on Pulaski Avenue. You know, we've got an exodus of jobs. You know, there's a real dearth of middle class, good paying jobs here.
He's also pushing for a casino near the airport that he says would generate revenue for Illinois. When I talked to him early on in his candidacy, Gonzalez says he did not support an income tax increase, but he was willing to consider options, like imposing a sales tax on more services. Some of that sounds similar to Madigan's position. The speaker's also been vague about taxes, save for continually promoting a constitutional amendment that would tax income greater than $1 million. Madigan also says Illinois' fiscal problems must be remedied through a mix of tax hikes and spending cuts, but he never really goes into specifics and says it has to be done on a bipartisan basis. Gonzalez says before Illinois considers higher taxes, lawmakers need to roll back expenses, including what's spent on prisons.
I mean, you know, we're spending $1 billion on a prison system that isn't working. I think we need to start thinking about other alternatives, especially for nonviolent offenders, that could save us a lot of money and also help to reduce this recidivism rate and cut down on mass incarceration. We've got a lot of nonviolent offenders behind bars and too many repeat offenders that need help.
Gonzalez could be called a nonviolent criminal himself. The Daily Herald first revealed that Gonzalez spent some time in jail and had several criminal convictions in the early 90s, including forgery, theft, and misuse of credit cards. He was pardoned last year by then-Governor Pat Quinn. Gonzalez's spokesman is quoted as saying it's a story that can resonate. It's important to see, he says, where Gonzalez came from and where he is now. It's something that can inspire people. It's a past local voters are being reminded of, thanks to campaign mailers and yard signs that now dot the area, reading, "Vote no on convicted felon Jason Gonzalez." Madigan hasn't said much publicly about his opponent. His news conferences have focused on the state's historic budget impasse, but he was asked at least once whether he was campaigning door-to-door in his district.
I've done some walking. Yeah, I've been very well received.
Do you plan to continue that?
We're waging a strong campaign in House District 22. We expect to be successful.
Madigan said that in the Capitol, the place where Gonzalez says the speaker spends so much time being a power broker, he's not home to help the district. Of course, there is another way to look at it. Being arguably the most powerful man in Springfield brings all kinds of benefits to Madigan's neighbors. And all of that talk about Madigan being to blame for the state's ills?
If you wish to be a critic of me, then you would blame everything that's happened in the state for the last several years on me. Some do that. Some people do that. I don't choose to be so negative. I choose to look at the problems we are looking at today, work to be reasonable, work to be moderate, work not to be extreme, bring people together and work toward a solution to the problems. But, you know, if people wish to be critics, then they're going to be critics.
As Illinois wades into its ninth month without a budget, Madigan has cast himself as a defender of the middle class. He's got labor lined up behind him to fight off the governor's anti-union proposals. But that's not good enough for Gonzalez, who, by the way, says he's the son of a union electrician and that right to work would be terrible for Illinois. It's also apparently not good enough for Gonzalez's committed and wealthy backers. But to use an old Chicago political phrase, Gonzalez insists he's nobody, nobody sent.
So I will tell you right now, you know, I'm not a plant by the GOP. I'm not a plant by Mr. Rauner. I'm not a plant by anyone. I've wanted to do this for quite some time. And a lot of politics is about timing. And I feel it's the right time. Not only is it the right time, it's my time to enter politics. And I feel that, you know, it's a critical time for the state to have some new leadership and have people that are committed to solving problems in our state. And that's the kind of person I am.
Still, huge amounts of money are pouring into the race, and many of Gonzalez's financial backers appear to be connected to Bruce Rauner. That includes businessman Blair Hall, who donated to Rauner's campaign for governor. It's hard to tell, though. Much of the money comes from people hiding behind super PACs or nonprofits that don't have to disclose contributions. So much money has been spent by outside groups supporting Gonzalez that it triggered an Illinois law allowing both sides to raise as much as they can from whomever they want. It's worth mentioning, there are two other challengers in the race, Joe Barboza and Graciela Rodriguez, but neither appears to have campaigned at all. No websites, no public Facebook pages, no evidence of campaign fundraising. Gonzalez says they're plants, intended to split the opposition vote and tip the election in Madigan's favor. Madigan's spokesman says he knows nothing of any other candidates. Whoever wins the four-way race is all but assured the seat. It's a heavily Democratic district, and no Republican has filed to run in the general election anyway. So after Tuesday, the fight's over. Until, of course, next January, when newly inaugurated representatives of the 100th General Assembly will choose who will lead them as Speaker of the Illinois House. I'm Amanda Vinicky with Illinois Edition's pre-primary special. Still ahead, a Republican challenger who's got backing from the governor. Hey there, State House Bureau Chief Amanda Vinicky here for an Election 2016 pre-primary special Illinois edition. Earlier, we heard from Senator Sam McCann, who's in a hotly contested primary, coming up an interview with his opponent, Bryce Benton. But first, a word about the other major so-called proxy campaign. This one's up north in Chicago, and it's the one President Barack Obama cut an ad for.
I'm Barack Obama. I'm asking you to vote for Democrat Juliana Stratton for state representative.
You don't typically have a president of the United States interjecting in state legislative races, but this one clearly got Obama's attention last month when he was in Springfield to give a big speech before the General Assembly. Obama was talking about working across the aisle when Representative Duncan stood up and said something like, heck yeah.
Well, we'll talk later, Duncan. You just see him. One thing I've learned is folks don't change.
Evidently, Obama was in on Duncan, having skipped session for a couple of close controversial votes and not siding with Democrats on others. It's won him kudos from Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and a couple of $1 million in campaign support. But it's left Democrats like longtime Representative Monique Davis smarting. I talked with her about it just after Obama's speech.
I'm very disappointed in Duncan doing that. Duncan and I were friends. I'm disappointed in his behavior, and I would very well not trust him again to be a part of a team. I wouldn't trust him ever again. Suppose he was playing with the Bulls, and all of a sudden he deserved to jump away from the Bulls and play with one of the other teams and then help that team to lose. How do you look upon yourself?
Members understand. Members are cheerleading me on.
That's Duncan, who says Democrats actually appreciate his having stood up to House Speaker Michael Madigan.
Many members in the Democratic Party, they are sick and tired of us being under the thumb of one person. Do you think there are other members here who have problems with their legislation not even coming out of rules, not even going to being assigned to committee? There are no right answers for every single item that the Democrats have for a particular solution on everything. We have to work together and reach across both sides of the aisle.
Never mind that Madigan says he doesn't have that sort of control over House members. As Duncan sees it, if he wins, it'll set other legislators free to follow in his footsteps and break ranks. Let's get back to that Republican contest in central western Illinois, where Senator Sam McCann says he's facing a primary challenge for having done so. That challenge is being mounted by Bryce Benton, a state trooper, who says, uh-uh.
Senator McCann would have everyone believe that that he has a primary because of one vote, you know, because of 1229. In reality, Senator, I'm in this race because people deserve a consistent conservative Republican. When Senator McCann campaigned in 2010, he ran as a fiscal conservative. Some of my biggest supporters right now are the people who supported Senator McCann heavily and wholeheartedly when he first ran for office. One of them owns a business here in Springfield where Senator McCann announced his candidacy in 2010. So, you know, I'm happy to have the support. I think that there are people in this state that believe in limited government and low taxes and conservative principles. And ultimately, Senator McCann hasn't lived up to that.
How so? How has he not been conservative?
He's voted consistently with Democrats on out-of-balance budgets. He threatened to run as a independent for governor. 1229, he wanted to take bargaining power away from the popularly elected governor in this state who's trying to get our finances in order, and that was a large part of it. You know, I believe that putting that power in the hands of an arbitrator who's not accountable to anyone is the wrong decision. So I think that over and over, and again, he didn't participate in Republican primaries unless he's on the ballot. So a lot of those things I hear over and over from people in the district that they want somebody who's a consistent conservative and who espouses those principles on a regular basis. You know, Republicans are already in the super minority in the legislature, so we need people who can work together with their own party to come up with ideas and to push ideas,
I think that right now the 50th district doesn't have a strong voice in the Senate because they don't have an open door with his own party and with the governor's office. I think that's unfortunate. We need better than that.
You support generally what Governor Bruce Rauner wants. Do you support it at this cost? I mean, at what point is it time to fund higher education and leave behind issues like the prevailing wage?
Let me just say that what's happening with the universities is extremely unfortunate. I think that, you know, educating our children and our college kids is one of the most important things we do as a society, obviously. I'm not a fan of what's happening as a result of the budget impasse, but I do think that it's important what's happening because I think that for years and years, Democrats in this state have been, you know, unwilling to compromise and unwilling to come up with solutions to the budget mess. And finally, we've got a governor who is trying. And I don't agree with everything he does all the time. I don't agree the way he goes about it sometimes. But we finally got someone who's trying. And I think for him to give up now on what he's trying to pass, I think would be a mistake. Because I think if we don't do it now, then what's to stop Democrats from holding, you know, drawing the line in the sand again the next time it's budget negotiations. And then we're 4 years down the road and nothing's ever been done because we didn't hold firm and push for the principles we believe in now.
What specifically do you support? You said you don't agree with everything Governor Rauner has done, but there are some points where you are in agreement. So kind of go through the list of those five.
Sure. So I think the easiest ones that most people can agree on, including, you know, overwhelmingly the public agrees with term limits and with the redistricting. You know, right now in Illinois, there's too much power in politics, and I think most people can agree with that. You've got guys like Speaker Madigan, who has been the Speaker of the House for almost as long as I've been alive. There's a problem with that. You know, it's nearly impossible, in my opinion, to serve the people and have that much incentive to continue to be a politician. So I wholeheartedly agree with term limits. That would be
one. And will you term limit yourself?
I don't plan to term limit myself, but I can. I absolutely will help introduce the legislation to get that amendment so we can place term limits in effect.
Why not say that you'll, if term limits are such a good thing, why not say, okay, I'm going to limit how long I'll be there?
Because I believe in a level playing field. So if I term limit myself and I say, hey, I'm gonna stay in here for 6 years or 8 years or 10 years or however long it is, and we've got guys on the other side of the aisle who aren't gonna make that commitment, then I think that creates an unfair advantage for Democrats. As I said before, I'm 100% in favor of the term limits, and I think that they're very important, and I will absolutely push for that as a state senator. The redistricting is the same thing. We need to make it so the people pick their representatives and not the other way around. I think that when you allow legislators and whoever's in party to draw the maps to what's most advantageous to them, that just doesn't make any sense. And I think that if you talk to people in the district, overwhelmingly, they agree with that. So the only people holding this up are the career politicians who are the only ones who have anything to lose when it comes to the redistricting.
How about the prevailing wage? I mean, this is a big issue for unions, and you're a member of one.
I am, yeah. I'm a proud state worker. I know a lot of people, and I work with people every day who are, you know, serving the people of Illinois every single day and working hard and should continue to earn a fair wage for that. You know, I disagree with the governor, I think, a little bit, because I do think that collective bargaining is an important thing for state workers to maintain. I think that particularly in my profession in law enforcement, the working hours and things like that, there has to be an intermediary there to work between the state and with, you know, the union and its employees. That said, we have to be able to move forward. We've got to start getting the state's expenses into line, because if we don't, then we're going to continue down the same path. From what I understand, the prevailing wage is something that has been laid off a little bit. I don't think the governor is pursuing that as much. I think that it is good to focus on the things that more people can agree with, like the term limits and things like that. But that said, I do think that that is an important aspect of moving forward in this state, because we can't shoulder everything on the backs of state workers. That's not fair, and that's not the way to solve the state's problems. But it is an area where we can start to save money.
Have you had members of either the union or other state workers either say, yeah, you know, it's not popular for me to say right now, but thanks, I agree with this, or perhaps the opposite, that they've said, what are you doing? We're all supposed to be in this together. This is a governor that wants, that doesn't have any respect for state workers. What are you doing? Siding with him.
I've heard both, certainly. I can tell you I think the majority has been people that understand that this state's in trouble. And like myself, you know, I have a great job. I enjoy my job very much. I have a good pension with the state. But I understand that if we continue on the path we're on, and if we don't all make sacrifices, then there's not going to be a pension. There's not going to be the resources we need when we retire, you know, the health care and the paychecks that we have all paid into, and we've paid, you know, every cent that we've been required to, we've paid in. So I hear people say, hey, you know, the government didn't make their payments and we have, so don't hit us. And I can tell you, I have no plans to hit pensions or hit the benefits people have been promised when they started. So people who are retired and in the system now, I think that it's the wrong move to punish them because they've been doing what they've been expected to do.
Bryce Benton, the Illinois state trooper in the throes of one of the biggest state legislative races of Illinois' 2016 primary. For 19 seats up for grabs this year, the primary is the only race. No candidate from the other party has filed to run in the general election. That's true in the Benton-McCann, Gonzalez-Madigan, and Duncan-Stratton matchups. Visit us at WUIS.org for extended interviews, stories, and more before you go to the ballot box March 15th. Even if you're not registered to vote, a grace period allows you to get that done through Election Day. Thanks for listening to Illinois Edition's pre-primary special. I'm Amanda Vinicky.